You're listening to Speaking of Urology, the official podcast for Urology Times. As always, our commitment is to deliver urologists and allied health professionals timely and informative insights from leaders in the specialty. Our exclusive interviews bring expert analysis, practice advice, and policy perspectives to help our listeners practice more efficiently. I'm your host and associate editor, Hannah Clark. In this episode, we revisit a Urology Times X Spaces event in which Dr. Eugene Reed and Dr. Logan Galansky highlighted key topics in health policy and provided a recap of the AUA's recent annual Urology Advocacy Summit, which took place on February 26th to the 28th in Washington, D.C.
Hello, I'm Logan Galansky. I'm a urology resident at Johns Hopkins, as well as this year's AUA Holtgrue Legislative Fellow. And I'm here with Dr. Eugene Reed, who is the Chief of Urology for Kaiser Permanente Southern California, the President-elect of the AUA Western Section, and the Chair of the AUA's Public Policy Council, among his other roles. Today, we are here to discuss the AUA's annual Urology Advocacy Summit, which took place at the end of February of this year. This conference intends to bring together urologists, trainees, mid-level providers, patient advocates, and other stakeholders from across the country to Washington, D.C. to work together to advocate for our patients, practices, and the future of urology. We had an amazing event this year with wonderful speakers, including keynote addresses from Dr. Lindsay Harrell of the University of Michigan, who spoke on her work regarding the urologic workforce and burnout, as well as longtime political strategist and academic scholar Donna Brazile, who gave a very rousing and entertaining talk. For myself and many others, though, the highlight of the summit is being able to go to Capitol Hill and meet with members of Congress to discuss the AUA's legislative priorities. This year, the summit had three main legislative asks, which are decided upon after surveys are sent out to AUA members and then reviewed by the AUA Public Policies Committees. These topics were somewhat complex this year, but I'm going to try to give a brief overview to sort of frame the rest of our discussion. So the first legislative ask at this year's summit was for Medicare payment reform. And essentially, Medicare physician payment has been cut by 26% over the past 22 years, and specialty physicians are facing an additional 3.3% cut to Medicare reimbursement, despite the rising costs of practicing urology. And so this year at the summit, we advocated for providing an inflationary adjustment equal to the Medicare Economic Index, updating the budget neutrality threshold, and reforming the quality payment program. So all this to say that we advocated for Medicare reimbursement to increase with inflation as it has for every other stakeholder in the healthcare space, except for physicians. Similarly, workforce shortages have been a major issue affecting not just urology, but all specialties. However, there is a growing demand for urologic services as our population ages, and over 50% of U.S. counties do not have a practicing urologist, which contributes to delays in care. So at the summit, we advocated for several pieces of legislation, including the Resident Physician Shortage Reduction Act, which asked to increase the number of GME positions that are funded by Medicare, the SPARK Act, which incentivizes young urologists to practice in rural settings with a loan forgiveness program, and the Conrad 30 and Physician Access Reauthorization Act, which helps place foreign grad physicians in underserved communities in the United States. And then finally, the last ask was regarding telehealth. As we all saw during the pandemic, telehealth became an essential part of medical practice, and urology was some of the biggest adopters of telehealth during the pandemic, with 70% of urologists reporting using telehealth services. However, telehealth benefits and flexibilities that were implemented during the pandemic are set to expire at the end of this year. So at the summit, we advocated for the Connect for Health Act to permanently protect these telehealth provisions. So that is sort of the quick overview of what we spoke about at the summit this year and with our congressional members. And we will follow closely to see how our efforts play out. But importantly, each summit also has a theme to sort of unite everyone together. And the theme of this year's summit was resilience. And so Dr. Reed, I'd like to turn it over to you and talk about what this theme meant to you as a urologist engaged in advocacy.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Galansky. And thank you, the Urology Times, for allowing us the opportunity to have this way of communicating to the public in regards to the work they were doing in for the American Urologic Association. Resilience is a broad statement, but I think it's really apropos to what we've heard across the country over the last several years, not just this past year. And so it was a nice summation you gave of our asks. Our asks really are centered around the idea that, frankly, we're in a state of crisis, if you will, with healthcare, in particular, in urology, the lack of urologists, in spite of the absolute increasing demand that is occurring across this country for urologic care. And so resilience really, if you think about it, regardless if you're running a practice or if you're dealing with trying to access care to your patients across the communities, or if it's really about even hiring urologists and other urologic providers, and despite the fact that you also have people who are retiring, we're sort of in this crossroads, if you will, of where the population of the U.S. population that's growing older, that's living longer, has really challenged us in regards to running, delivering healthcare in this country. So going to the resilience theme, we thought as a planning committee that resilience was really, really a very dynamic description of really about workforce, about payment reform, and about telemedicine, telehealth and urology, and really speaking to the patients, the providers, in the communities that are served in this country. So resilience is and the feedback on that throughout the summit through the speakers, I really appreciated the fact that they did understand that, and they did relate to this theme throughout the presentation. So the summit, if you haven't gone, it's the American Urologic Association hosts an annual summit in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill, like you had said. And really what's unique about this is that a third of these folks are young or the first timers. And so I feel that it's compelled people to grow and feel that, it is a big need for us to really get involved. And the way you get involved is a different sort of getting involved. It's really about talking to legislators who really know nothing. They really don't. And they really appreciate the time and effort that urologists have taken representing the districts of their. So what happens is you go to Capitol Hill, regardless if it's a senator's office or a congressperson's office, you're spending time with those folks representing the districts that you are actually practicing in. And if you think about it, we're talking about panels of thousands of patients, i.e. voters, in that district. So these are the things that are really compel, I think, folks who go to the Hill. Then they realize that as physicians, we do represent the community of that particular incumbent for that office, who's very interested in what the voices of their districts are saying about healthcare in urology and specifically. So that's a long-winded answer, but it's about resilience, and we can go from there.
No, absolutely. I think you touched on several really important points, particularly involving sort of the evolution of what this conference has been, as well of just healthcare in general, and how we've seen a real groundswell in the number of people attending the summit. This was your final summit, however, under your tenure as the chair of the Public Policy Council. So I guess speaking more to sort of that evolution, how has the summit changed since you first were involved before the pandemic started even?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I really appreciate you recognizing the growth of something that started, really as a small, quote unquote, mom and pop outfit that has really grown to 300 plus urologists. It was packed to the gills. We couldn't accept any more. We were capped at 300, but it goes to show you that we hit on a vein, if you will, speaking about something that I think resonates with urologists. And so the summit, I think the biggest take-home message that I can give you about, at least in my tenure as chair of the Public Policy Council, is that the work that we've done, somehow we've been able to connect with the frontline urologist to be able to say, not that we would, you know, we can make a difference immediately, but it is about explaining that there's an elusive art, if you will, to healthcare advocacy. And what I mean by that is it's not like we're scientists in general as doctors, and we think that we can just immediately get results by testing a hypothesis. The problem is that in advocacy, it takes an understanding of what the policy states. These, I call it the three P's. The policy, what is the policy that we want to create or change? And then what is the process that goes about to create that change or adopt a new policy? And finally, it's the politics behind all that. And the politics is really where it's so elusive, and it's the long game, I've always said, that really is about going to the Hill every year to really talk on behalf of urologists and really compel the legislators to understand that there is a crisis at hand. So I think that's what I've learned in the summit, is that we've grown it to the point that now we have folks like you, Dr. Galansky, who are younger in their career, but really have not only just got born in interest, but have now changed the arc of your professional career to really understand that you can actually, as a urologist, you know, turn it into something very unique and very important in urologic care in this country by, you know, being more, much more involved and doing things like spending time on Congress on in understanding how this is all, how advocacy runs in this country.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, for me, that's something that is so exciting and inspiring about the summit every year, is that you get together with this group of practicing urologists who have, you know, big patient caseloads and are operating and are, you know, coming from all over the country, but they're taking their time to be here. And as you said, it has, you know, absolutely affected my career plans and sort of the trajectory of my training. And I think one of my favorite things about the summit is because you're surrounded by these urologists and patient advocates and others who really care about this space, you tend to leave the conference with a real renewed energy and optimism, and you're excited to go back home and take care of patients. But I think what you said regarding the three P's, particularly that politics piece, is really salient in this day and age with all the political divides we're seeing in Congress. I mean, even the week that we were there for the summit, the members of both houses had come back for special sessions because they needed to pass a funding bill or else the government was going to shut down, which is something that we've seen several times over the past few years. And I think with some of these legislative asks, particularly like Medicare reform and workforce shortages, which just seem like these monumental tasks, it can often feel like we're going to the Hill and we're trying to educate these members who often are not physicians or don't have a lot of insider knowledge into what it's like to be a doctor. And it sort of feels like, you know, you're shouting into the void. So I was hoping you could maybe highlight some of the AUA's, you know, wins that have occurred over your time working with the AUA's advocacy efforts and, you know, give us a bit of the light at the end of the tunnel of what this work might lead to.
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I remember, and maybe some of the listeners, maybe they won't remember, but Betty Ford, you know, was the wife of President Gerald Ford. And at the time, it took that long ago. And I'll say one word, pink, and you'll mm-hmm. know what that means. Mm-hmm. That's the power of advocacy, right? But it takes that long, those many years, to really then create the successes that breast cancer advocacy has really gained and garnered. And, you know, I emulate sort of the work we're doing in that regard, that maybe in 10 years from now, you know, I'll look back retired and way out enjoying the sunset on the beach, is that basically going, man, you know, we did a lot of work in this space, and now, you know, we're now pink. This, you know, some of the successes, just to let you know, I mean, it stems from the readers, maybe, I mean, the listeners maybe understanding how, you know, what PSA is and how the controversies that arose when PSA came out of nowhere to say the United States Physicians Task Force, who's a is a political body who's really mission is to come out with recommendations for the government and CMS to fall back on to say, this is what we're going to do. They came out with a very controversial statement to recommendation as grade D, as in do not recommend PSA screening. Mm-hmm. And that probably in 2011, and that one probably is the biggest one where policy had to change and had to change quickly. We were caught, you know, we were very unsophisticated then, but I think we got caught really just understanding what are the politics behind this and the process that we can go about to not only change the grade D to a grade C fairly quickly with the help of a lot of our urology constituents, but including patient advocates, I might add, but as well understanding that, you know, there was going to be a palpable curve, if you will, that showed that this made a huge difference in a negative way to the deaths of many folks, I think, by making like patients think that you didn't need to get screened at all. And so I think that the big thing to understand is that we changed that grade so that we would continue to have, you know, coverage of PSA screening. But in addition is also working with USPSTF with our urology colleagues to make sure that they understood that we need to work together in terms of any future recommendations, which I currently is about to come out now. But the other ones, Eurotrauma, led by Dr. Mark Edney, who is now the policy chair who takes over. He has really had a big influence on in terms of that win back in 2009. In regards to coverage of our veterans, in regards to urologic care, including infertility treatments. We've had big wins in the U.S. Urology Telehealth Task Force. Back then in 2016, you know, we had started it then and people were like, what? I don't understand what telehealth is and what this means. And guess what? The pandemic came and, you know, the old expression, never let a good crisis go to waste. This one was really about, you know, understanding that because we had things in place, urology became one of the largest specialty adopters to really get into the telehealth space. And we continue to do so in a big way to make it one of our big asks, as you had mentioned before. Prior authorization. Prior authorization is a big one that really affects everybody's kind of wellness, you know, understanding the amount of money spent to try to get prior authorization to do the things we need to do for our patients. The Surgeon General and the Director of Centers of CMS had asked for a special meeting that included urologists, a small meeting of urology leaders to really hone in on what it is that we needed to do with prior authorization. And so the newest physician fee schedule is addressing some of these things in conjunction with the AMA. You know, those are just a few. I wish I could spend an hour talking about a long list of things, but I think these are the things. And I think the other thing finally is, you know, is healthcare equity. I think we're moving into a space that from a standpoint of inclusion and equity and diversity, healthcare, you know, not only with the patients but also in terms of research, making sure that we provide the access to research, and that's under the public policy, you know, arena for us in the AUA. So I think that those are kind of big things that I put my hat around that we're really devoted to, and frankly, the patient in the center, launching patient advocacy programs in bladder cancer, prostate cancer, and kidney cancer. Those are kind of the things that are big wins for us, you know, in involving both the patient and the urology providers.
Absolutely. I mean, that's all such impactful and exciting work. And even just in my few years being involved in this, you know, I've seen the AUA have wins on the state level with chaperone laws and scope of practice. You know, we've addressed drug shortages, like you said, with bladder cancer. I think that, you know, although it sometimes feels like we're just saying these things and no one's really listening, there are real, you know, tangible effects of this work that's being done. And right. especially, you know, as we look onto the horizon of potential issues that are going to arise, you know, you and I have talked about the, you know, rapidly increasing technology in healthcare, especially with AI and what that's going to mean. You know, the continued regulatory burdens. There's so much, you know, controversy and conversation right now around PBMs and drug pricing and step therapy. And then with scope of practice, and I mean, increasing utilization of APPs, but also addressing the physician workforce shortage. I think there's still a lot of work to be done, of course.
Right. And, you know, the other concept too, right, is obviously is in understanding that the political machine in DC runs, you know, with funding, and the fact that, you know, right now we're in a presidential election this year, but Congress runs every 2 years, the Senate, you know, every four or six. And I think we basically are really also making sure that we're involved in that process. And so the political action committees, the AUA PAC has grown. And I think that's a big part of also understanding that in order for us to have influence and be able to be in front of folks that are in Congress that do support our urology efforts and initiatives, that we absolutely help in regards to being part of the process. And the being a part of that process is political action committee funding. And so the AUA PAC has grown quite tremendously over the last several years. And I'm quite proud to say that we've really met our targets every year to try to get urologists and friends of urologists to really contribute to this process so that we may, you know, effectively connect with our Congress folks in the Senate and the House.
Definitely. You know, and I hear you say that the summit started off as a mom and pop shop, or that the PAC is, you know, pretty new in its infancy. It's funny because of how, you know, well attended and sort of record breaking the summit was this year. As you mentioned, we had over 300 attendees from states all across the country. We had all time highs for first time participants and trainees, and we raised more money for the PAC than any of the prior years. And as you said, it's just built year after year. And so it is really exciting to see how quickly the interest in this space among urologists and others involved in urology has grown. As someone who has sort of been involved in every stage of the process, what advice do you have for those wanting to get more involved? You mentioned donating to the PAC is a good point of entry. How else can others sort of participate in this process?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think it's a good question. You know, I always feel like, well, if when I was young, how did this all begin for me? And, you know, there wasn't like a pathway that it is now. I mean, now, at least now, there's a lot of organization behind all this that you can really get a lot of mentors. And so the biggest thing to me is to really find a mentor, if you will, somebody that's in this space that can really help you. And there are many people, both local and state, you know, from a urology standpoint that have been very active. And all you got to do is look on the website of your section. You know, there's 8 sections of urology, and you can see who's involved in policy work, or you certainly, you know, things like this on Twitter, on X now. But you can also, you know, there's a on social media, understand who they are. And then, you know, connecting with them in that way. I think that if you're interested, you sort of, this is the thing about, I think for folks, you will find a way, meaning that you recognize an urgency, a calling, if you will. You start to figure out, well, you know, who can I align myself with to, you know, to really help with how this passion becomes something more palpable. And then, you know, that person or organization like the AUA and advocacy can help you develop the vision to then be able to, you know, amplify what it is that you're really interested in doing. Because there's different aspects of policy work that we need, whether it's on the federal side, like you're doing, Dr. Galansky, or the state side, or on the regional side, or even, you know, and from a standpoint of representing Black Americans with the Frank Jones Society, or if you're, Women in Urology Society, Women in Urology. Those are things that empower you to act by giving you this ability to join into these groups that are part of the AUA and public policy, and then creating short-term wins. I think these things you'll create these wins, now, albeit it could be, for the group as a whole, or it could be your own little wins that you're kind of going for, which then finally, I think anchor you into really what folks are doing, like saying, I want to do this for the rest of my career. As not the only thing I want to do, but it is really a part of my practice that really rounds out and helps me, make a difference, if you will. And I think, me reflecting on, the things that I've done, I think that what I just told you is sort of how I looked at it, very organically, very early on. But I was just like, I had a few mentors and they helped me build that coalition and vision and helped me get my like short-term wins, and that turned into something bigger over time. And I think that that's probably my advice to folks. It's not a prescriptive, method, but here's the thing. This generation now, there's a lot of opportunities, and I encourage people to apply to the Holcru scholar like you, or the Gallagher Health Policy Scholar, and those are the opportunities that are more formalized education, pretty intense and really, really unbelievably productive for individuals. So I encourage people to look into that too, and look, you can look that up on the AUA website.
Absolutely. And I mean, like you said, I think I've seen a real concerted effort from the advocacy arm of the AUA to really engage those subspecialty organizations like you're mentioning, as well as the AUA sections, to bring in sort of the everyday urologist more into this work. But I couldn't agree with more with what you were saying about mentorship. We've talked about this a bit before, but just for sort of the broader listeners, I saw an email one day that had policy and advocacy resident work group, advertisement in it. And that was something I was interested in given my background. And I signed up and I went to my first summit, and I just happened, by luck of the draw, to sit next to Mark Edney at the Maryland table. And, we struck up a conversation, and from there he introduced me to you and others, who are leaders in this space. And, I learned about the Holcru Fellowship, and, was lucky enough to be able to be doing that this year. And it's been a phenomenal experience. I could not recommend it highly enough to anyone who's interested and has the time during residency or fellowship to participate. It has been so eye-opening and just really beneficial, I think, for me in being able to take care of patients as when I return to sort of my clinical chief year this summer. And I think it's, exactly what you said. It's all about just looking for those things that interest you, finding the mentors, and then just, showing up and being present. And I think that's how we help fight burnout and then improve, care for our patients.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Dr. Lansky, you yourself are a mentor. I mean, you started the Young Urologists, committee. Explain to the listeners. I mean, it started as a small group, but how many in now?
Yeah, absolutely. So, it actually started as sort of a Holcru Fellowship passion project for another leader in this space, Dr. Kevin Koo. When he was a Holcru Fellow several years ago, he had an interest in starting this work group, which began as the Policy and Advocacy Resident Work Group. And then when I joined about 4 years ago, there were around 15 to 20 members. And I, found that I was loving our Zoom calls and how excited and energetic everyone was. So I applied and was selected to be the chair of the work group last year. And, we had one cycle when I was the chair where we were had to turn away applications for the first time ever. And I had lots of people email me or come up to me at conferences and say, hey, I really wanted to do this, but I wasn't able to, what can I do next? And so given that, I met with some of the AUA staff, as well as, some of these mentors that I mentioned, and we decided to totally change the structure of the work group. So now it is an open group. We had over 70 applications this year. So the group has nearly 80 members now. We have a new executive board that has leadership positions, as well as five subcommittees that each have different areas that they are working on this year, including DEI, outreach, resident legislative priorities, among others. And just seeing the growth at all levels, medical students, residents, fellows, we even had some undergrads attending the summit this year, has been just a totally thrilling experience and something that I'm so proud to be a part of.
There you go. I mean, I couldn't have encapsulated any better as to why our listeners should really think about the advocacy work, because this really this has really gone to a whole different level. If you think about it, the AUA, as an example, they've been around. They were founded in 1902, and you know, the thing about it is there are a lot of urology interests all across the country, albeit we're a smaller specialty. But if you think about it, we're also a very important specialty, particularly in the Medicare population. So going back to, you know, the needs here, what we're seeing in the summit brought together was this idea of, well, how do we create professional resilience to really protect the health of our in this nation, you know, in the context that the demand is so high and growing year after year. And the point is that the AUA, you know, has really provided invaluable support to the urologic community in ways of the mission statement, which was the highest standards of clinical care in urology through education, research, and I've always said this, and you've heard me say this before, the formulation of healthcare policy. And that is part of their mission statement. And being involved in this regard and its growth that we've seen over the last decade with many folks that we've named, a few of those that we've named, and many more that should be named, really as a collective whole, gives you and me, particularly, you have an outstanding future ahead of you in this space to really kind of impact and empower the urology community. So I hope that we'll be able to empower not only urologists, but empower patients, empower nurses, empower really the general public. And one day, you know, maybe the color is blue for prostate cancer that becomes very identifiable. I mean, we're getting there, but this is sort of the space that I talk about that's so elusive. And it's so against, as a doctor, we're such scientists that it we don't really, you can't really, you know, test a hypothesis by running the experiment, so to speak. But you do have to do the three P's. I know Dr. Edney, if he listens to this, you know, he deserves credit. He's the one who enlightened me about the three P's in the early years. Is, again, you know, policy and process and politics. And I've always held true to that, and it's so true. I think we regardless of what we're trying to do, being able to listen to where the politics are, I think will help and bodes well for urologists. Because in the end, urologists are very approachable folks. That's why I went into urology myself, and I think that's translating to why advocacy is so successful for us in urology.
You just heard an exclusive interview with Dr. Ree and Dr. Galansky on health policy in urology and the annual Urology Advocacy Summit. Be sure to subscribe to Speaking of Urology on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps. You can get the latest in urology news, practice management advice, and health policy updates by visiting our website, urologytimes.com, or by following us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and X, formerly Twitter, @Urology Times. Thank you for listening.